I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times.
Today, Pennsylvanians can learn the extent of sexual abuse in these dioceses. And for the first time, we can begin to understand the systematic cover-up by church leaders that followed. As the members of the grand jury wrote in their report, we need you to hear this. There have been other reports about child sex abuse within the Catholic Church, but never on this scale. For many of us, those earlier stories happened someplace else. Now we know the truth. It happened everywhere.
That was Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro yesterday announcing the findings of a two-year investigation by a grand jury into allegations of child sex abuse by clergy and a systematic cover-up by Catholic leadership in six Pennsylvania dioceses, including Pittsburgh, Erie, Allentown, Harrisburg, Scranton, and Greensburg. Two previous grand juries detailed similar conclusions in Philadelphia and Johnstown, Altoona. The report is graphic, describing 301, quote, pedophile priests preying on 1,000 children over a 70-year period and church leaders protecting the abusers rather than the victims. We're talking about grooming and groping, raping, child pornography. It's a disturbing read. Most of the cases are too old to bring charges because of the statute of limitations and because some of the accused have died. It was an emotional scene at the press conference with victims and family members present, crying and clutching each other. The grand jury outlined four reforms and said their work is not done. Kevin McCrory joins us. He's part of a team of reporters here at WHYY covering the story. He's editor of Keystone Crossroads and edited the statewide coverage of this report. And Kevin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
Describe the scene yesterday as the Attorney General made this announcement.
I mean, the Attorney General was very forceful in the way he laid all this stuff out in about a 45-minute, very emotional press conference where you had victims and victims' families there on stage behind him, tearful, clutching each other. It was quite an emotional scene with that. The press gathered in the room below the state capitol, the press room there, packed room to just listen to him list off, as we heard in that clip, in vivid detail what had happened, and his assessment, the grand jury's assessment of really what has gone wrong in much of the Catholic Church over the past many decades.
In fact, he made it a point, and having read a lot of or some of what the grand jury reported on, was the end of euphemisms. It's time now to use disturbing but real language to describe these allegations.
That's true. And I mean, you read that grand jury report. It's not new that you see these allegations. This is a pattern that we've seen in Boston, in Philadelphia, in Altoona, Johnstown, and elsewhere. But to see it on this scale across the entire state of Pennsylvania, methodically detailed and profiled through evidence built, of course, from victim testimony, but also from official church documents, and being able to go through, the church's own understanding of this as it wrote things down in these secret archives, and to be able to put that together in again, vivid detail. You hear these stories and it just floors you, right? You have a priest in Harrisburg who allegedly abuses five sisters in a single family. Another in the Diocese of Greensburg who is said to have impregnated a 17-year-old girl, married her, then divorced her much later. Another instance where a priest gets someone married and then arranges her abortion. Another priest who allegedly admitted to assaulting at least a dozen boys. And the bishop in Erie later thanks him for all you've done for God's people. So you have story after story like this, and we could go on. We could fill the show, right? It's a 900 some page report that again and again just shows what happened in its disgusting detail. You're talking about an institution that's supposed to be of trust. You're talking about people who, people put their faith in their lives in.
Because these were priests and these were trusted people in the community. And it was clear on that stage there were family members there, and there was just crying everywhere because of the fact that we've got priests who took advantage of children.
Yeah, that's right. I get a little emotional because
I appreciate that.
My own life. I've had contacts in life who've been abused by priests. I've seen the effects of it pretty up close, and it ravages people for the rest of their lives.
Let me just give out the phone number to our listeners, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Let me go back to something that you said, Kevin, about these secret archives.
Yeah.
And the Attorney General made reference to them as well, essentially saying that these were controlled by the bishops in the diocese, and they essentially had the keys to this information. These were what, reports that the church had done on itself or on,
exactly.
And locked away.
And locked away. And, you know, there was a certain culture in mind where this was an internal, in-house investigation and understanding. And, you know, the Attorney General and the grand jury in this investigation brought in the FBI and said, here, look through these documents essentially and tell us what you see. And the FBI outlined essentially a pattern that they said is like a playbook for concealing the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's deflection, it's using euphemisms, it's not going to the police, it's downplaying allegations, you know, and you saw that pattern. Again, this is nothing new. This is not shocking, though it is shocking when you read the details. And you can only hope that when we're told now by bishops that they are taking this seriously, that they do have a different culture in mind, you know, that we have to, we really hope we can believe that.
And we should add that it seems as if this grand jury built on what previous grand juries in Pennsylvania did, both in Philadelphia, also Johnstown, Altoona. So essentially all the dioceses in Philadelphia have been investigated by a grand jury.
In Pennsylvania at this point, yes. Yeah, and in Philadelphia, it was the city district attorney who had done
Abraham.
The report. Yep. And in Johnstown, Altoona, it was the attorney general. And I think based on that experience and, of course, Philadelphia, it just became it was almost obvious that you had to start looking elsewhere because, you know, these victims are everywhere and people do deserve to tell their stories and have them scrutinized.
I posted something yesterday on a Facebook page. We got a lot of response, including a comment from Paul says, don't forget that the church fought against the release of this report. Help us understand. We should say, while there are named people who are named, there are a number of redacted names as well. What's the fate of that?
Well, to be clear, actually, none of the dioceses came out against this report. Some actually were quite publicly supportive of that idea, but you had individual clergy who were named in the report who were fighting it through legal means behind the scenes. And essentially, this raises a question about grand juries in general, right? This isn't like a typical trial where there is a prosecution and a defense and you can cross-examine witnesses and you can challenge evidence. This is a prosecutor building a case, you know, unilaterally, working with a team, working with a grand jury built of 23 individuals and trying to convince them to vote on an assessment of the truth. And maybe that will lead to charges at some point in certain cases. Maybe it won't. But in these cases, what these clergy grand juries have been doing in Philadelphia and in other places have been naming individuals.
Right.
So then you have this question of, should you have a grand jury be able to name individuals? And essentially the government is saying you committed this crime, though it's outside the statute of limitations, without them being able to have their own due process rights to defend their name, again, to challenge evidence and all that. So that's kind of where we still are in the process, because what the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania ends up stepping in and saying, yes, we agree that there's merit to that idea. And so we're going to allow anybody who's objected to have their names redacted. So then the Attorney General went and redacted them. They were able to say, well, we don't like this redaction, we like that redaction. It had to be sorted out with this special court-appointed master. And then that's what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. The deadline was yesterday. That court-appointed master had to finalize the redactions. And so that happened at 2 o'clock yesterday, right on the dot. We got the report. And now next month, you're going to have a whole separate slate of hearings to figure out those due process claims that individual clergy members were making to try to have their names not mentioned in the report.
And it seems that what's on the table is someone's reputation, I guess your right to your reputation.
Yes.
So this will be all argued or sorted out by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
That's right. Yes. And it is in the Pennsylvania Constitution, Marty, you and I have it ensures our right to reputation. So that is what the legal idea hinges on.
Now, there were four recommendations. They're a little bit complicated, but four recommendations that came out from this report, having largely to do with the statute of limitations, also about non-disclosure, or at least the ability to go to someone or to be able to, I guess, go to law enforcement in cases of alleged abuse. Help us understand that.
Yeah, so the first two are really the big ones, right? So the one idea would be to say, moving forward, we should not have a statute of limitations on child sexual assault. We should treat it like murder, where there is no statute of limitations. And if you can, you want to file a case, bring it in a civil courtroom and prove to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that a crime was committed, you can try that case. So that is the one that I could see based on where the legislature stands on the issue, right, based on the political environment, based on this report coming out and fueling conversation, you could see some momentum behind that, some real momentum, and maybe that would happen. Again, that's somewhat easier to do because it all has to do with the future. It has to do with bringing a case.
Future cases, right? Well,
right. And you know, yes, future cases. The harder thing is this other idea where we would say, if you were abused in the past, any time in the past, we're going to give you a 2-year window to file a civil claim and seek financial damages from the church. And so that would, you know, open up a floodgate of litigation that, if you're on one side of the issue, says, well, this is necessary. This allows that person to tell their story in court. This allows them to have some sort of satisfaction through the legal system. And then if you're on the other side of it, says, well, this is punishing the current church for the sins of the past. This potentially would bankrupt the church if there were enough of these that would go through. And so you have that debate. And that's been the real sticking point in Harrisburg. You've had different chambers pass different versions of these bills, but the consensus has never come around this idea of what they call a civil window where you can file these financial damages suits retroactively.
I thought it was interesting. Josh Shapiro said that in all these cases, he's never, I'm going to misquote him slightly, but basically saying he doesn't see people hunting for money out of this.
Right. And that's what, you know, some who are against it have used that line of rationale to say this is going to bring people out of the woodwork again who would hunt for money, or it's just going to line the pockets of the legal industry. When you talk to victims, that's not what at least they're publicly saying,
right,
and what they're telling you eye to eye is what they're after. What they're saying they're after is to feel vindicated in the eyes of the law that what happened to them, and to feel like they have a chance at least to ask people to hear their story and take it seriously. And of course, they would want a judgment that would present a certain legal satisfaction based on that.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And he is editor of Keystone Crossroads here at WHYY, editing, coordinating statewide coverage of this grand jury report that was released yesterday. Take a short break, and then we've got State Representative Mark Rossi waiting in the wings. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And we've been discussing the just-released Pennsylvania grand jury report alleging that 301, quote, pedophile Catholic priests sexually abused more than 1,000 children since the late 1940s. The grand jury actually believes the number is in the thousands, plural. The grand jury investigated allegations in 6 Pennsylvania dioceses in Pittsburgh, Erie, Allentown, Harrisburg, Scranton, and Greensburg. Our guest state representative, Democrat Mark Rossi, was one of those victims who testified before the grand jury about what happened to him when he was a boy. He called for the release of the report and has introduced legislation to change the statute of limitations. And Mark Rossi, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me
again. You're very welcome. What did you tell the grand jury when you testified?
I just wanted them to know my story, that, you know, how I was groomed and how Father Graff plied me with alcohol and pornography and the acts that he did to me. And then that final day where he took, you know, myself and my other childhood in his rectory room and raped me in the shower. And to actually hear those grand jurors sit there and listen intently and question, it was a relief. It was finally somebody was hearing us.
What did they want to know? I'm curious.
Well, they wanted to know exactly what happened, and since I was a legislature as well, I also got asked questions about why certain bills would never move through the legislative process. You know, I also talked about how the Catholic Conference was spending millions of dollars on lawyers and lobbyists. I mean, I gave a whole circle round view here of not just my abuse, but the process in the General Assembly as well.
Do you think other people, I don't know if you call yourself a survivor or a victim, and it's important that we use correct language here, but do you think other people like yourself who testified before the grand jury went away with that feeling of being heard?
I think it was a good day for many survivors. I mean, it was no doubt tough, but to have somebody actually listen after you've been denied and denied and denied by the diocese over and over and over. And quite honestly, I've never called myself a survivor yet. I don't know if I am. I've never spoken publicly like that. I consider myself a victim. And when I say that, you know, I'm saying that at that, you know, I have three of my other childhood friends who committed suicide. I have a lot of my other friends who suffer in this. I don't know if I've made this through yet. There's so many mental and physical problems that follow. That's why we want this legislation to pass the opportunity at the two-year civil window.
You mentioned Edward Graff, the priest who abused you, who raped you, I should say. He is implicated in this report involving victims in other victims in Pennsylvania, yep. Also in Texas. He is dead. But do you feel just having his name out there, is that some kind of justice for
you? It is, because I'm hoping other victims will come forward. I mean, we put his numbers of victims over 200.
200?
Over 200. So we know there's a lot of other victims out there. He's been at so many different parishes. When he left my parochial school in 1988, they sent him to a sexual abuse rehab center in Jimenez Springs, New Mexico, where they treat him for sexual abuse. And again, if you don't self-admit, and just like he did, they put him into the Amarillo Diocese, where he ended up abusing 20 or 30 more children.
Mm. This report, I mean, sadly, I almost hate to say this, but sadly, there are familiar stories here.
Yep.
And that's what's so disturbing about it. But what this report also does is to really look at leadership and the cover-up. Do you think it opens a new chapter in this area?
Absolutely. I mean, some people think that the abuse here is a scandal. And the real scandal is that the bishops aided and abetted these known predators. They are the ones who chose to protect their own reputations and assets rather than their own vulnerable children. And that's unacceptable. It's despicable. And that's why these reforms are important.
Let me read some comments from our Facebook page. One from Michael says, why isn't the church being charged like the mafia? Isn't this racketeering? The quote-unquote church protected these criminals.
Right.
What is the answer to that, Mark Rosen?
Believe me, I have so many people reaching out to me going, how is the RICO laws not enforced here? This is organized crime. And the only reason we're not calling it organized crime is because it's the Catholic Church. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something else would happen down the road here with as much cover-up has been taking place with these bishops.
A tweet, with the law requiring mandatory reporting of child abuse, why wasn't there a violation by the church for not reporting?
Unfortunately, the mandatory reporting laws were very weak at that time. They did not include clergy, which, as a member of this legislature, that's embarrassing that we would allow anybody who's around our children free passes.
You have, it's been a couple of years, you have tried to get some changes to the statute of limitations. What do you want, especially now that this other report is out?
Well, you know, we did pass it out of the House 2 years ago. It passed overwhelmingly 180-15, and that was to eliminate the criminal, move civil 30-50, and had a retroactive component to give victims up to age 50 to be able to file a civil lawsuit going backwards. So it was very powerful, and the members of the House supported that. Unfortunately, just when it went to the Senate, they had a different view. They took the view of the Catholic Conference and said that the bill was unconstitutional. And we called them out on it and said, show us where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has made that decision. And of course, they haven't. They just, you know, throw out different court cases that have nothing to do with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, with Superior Court and lower courts. And that's why we need to get to the bottom of this. It's got to be the black robes who are ultimately should make this decision if this bill would be constitutional.
So it's not a partisan issue necessarily? It's really the House versus the Senate?
It is, really. I mean, I had overwhelming Republican support, and I believe if the bill would run in the Senate, because I've heard from many members of the Senate that they would actually vote yes to support it. It just happens to be the Majority Leader Jay Cormann and Senate President Pro Tem Joe Scarnati that are stopping the bill from moving right now. They don't think victims deserve justice, is what they're saying. They believe that, you know, that the church should be protected here, that they shouldn't have to be open to lawsuits.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's State Representative Mark Rossi, a Democrat from Berks County. And he was one of the victims who testified before the grand jury. The grand jury report released yesterday by the Pennsylvania Attorney General alleging that 301 pedophile priests sexually abused more than 1,000 children since the late 1940s, although the grand jury believes that the number is much higher than that. And the investigations looked at the diocese in Pittsburgh, Erie, Allentown, Harrisburg, Scranton, and Greensburg. And I should add that there were investigations here in Philadelphia back in 2005 and more recently in the Altoona, Johnstown area. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read some more comments. One from Frank saying, how can Catholic clergy expect to lead emotionally and sexually healthy lives if they're committed to the unnatural state of sexual abstinence? I don't know if that's something you feel comfortable talking about, Mark Rossi, but go ahead.
I mean, sexual abuse happens in all institutions. Just because you're celibate, you know, doesn't exactly mean that you're going to be raping children. The problem here with the Catholic Church was the access. That, I mean, look, in one part of this grand jury report, they talked about a pedophile ring in Pittsburgh. So think about it. If you have a pedophile ring and you're bringing other pedophiles into your ring and you're saying, well, hey, you can become a priest and you have full access to children and the bishops will cover it up for us. And if you get caught, they're just going to move you to another place. So the access to children and being a pedophile is what brought them to the church. Should there be changes in the celibacy? I believe that. I mean, priests should be able to marry. I see it in other denominations. I mean, I don't know how anybody cannot, you know, have, you know, follow through on some of their sexual tendencies. It's kind of weird, but, you know, they think that, you know, it makes them more powerful. And quite honestly, it keeps them as the good old boys network.
What do you want church leadership to do in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'm tired of them saying that we're taking responsibility for this. The words that we want to hear is you're taking accountability. And until we hear that, and then also having them come out and support these recommendations, support elimination of the criminal statute, support opening a two-year window to give victims who have been timed out in the past the ability to go into a court of law and sue their perpetrator and sue the institution. It's time that we put the liability that the church caused, these bishops caused, back on them, not on the victim. Because right now, the taxpayers of Pennsylvania are the ones paying for this mess. When these victims are suffering and alcoholics and drug addicts, they're unemployed, they go through unemployment compensation, they all things that, you know, when they are dysfunctional, the taxpayers pay for it. So yes, these victims deserve some type of compensation for their damages. I don't understand how anybody would think any less of it. I had a friend who all he wanted was, I think, $20,000 he asked the diocese to pay back for all the prescriptions and all the therapy that he went through. He just asked, can you please reimburse me? They basically just shut the door on him and said, no way, you're out of the statutes. So, yes, victims, they deserve compensation, and it's about time we put the liability back on the people who caused it.
What has been the impact of what happened to you, but also what has happened to others on your faith?
Oh, I mean, for me, I mean, the mental and physical beatings that I take daily, they last forever. I mean, sometimes, you know, when I know people don't want to hear this, but victims of sexual abuse sometimes wish we were just rather dead because we won't have to suffer this every day of our life. We remember every day of our life what happened to us as kids. They have taken so much away from us. And, you know, that's why yesterday was a great day for us, having our collective voices being heard and forcing the bishops into a corner to start making changes. You know, but yesterday wasn't just about clergy victims. This was about all victims in Pennsylvania, from clergy victims, Jehovah Witnesses, from coaches, teachers who abused, parents who abused. This was a huge win because this is an opportunity for us to move this legislation forward to allow all victims to go into a court of law, not just clergy victims. So, you know, that's one of the things that I keep hearing where they're like, oh, it's all about the church. It's all about the church. Well, there's the Boy Scouts. There's many victims there that are looking to go into a court of law. But because the Catholic Church is spending millions and millions of dollars on lawyers and lobbyists, they are blocking justice for everybody.
Let me read some more comments. A Facebook comment from Sandra. They don't deserve to have the word clergy associated with these acts of horror. Religious leaders, priests who rape children, abuse their power, and commit psychic trauma in God's name, that can only be described as pure evil. Mark Rossi, what are your thoughts?
She's absolutely right. I mean, the unfortunate thing with these predator priests is once they abuse, they still receive their pension. They get to go live their still lavish lifestyle and prayer and penance. And if they don't live there, they're living around people's homes right now. They're living next to playgrounds. They're living next to ice cream shops. And they're looking for their next victims because these predators are not on Megan's list. The church protected them until the statutes ran out, and then it just left victims on the curb out there to rot and die like they always have. But we have a fight in us right now. With this report out, you know, I want all victims out there to know that we're not going away. We will get this legislation passed out of the House, and then we're going to see what type of courage and bravery the Senate members have to do the right thing. Or are they going to stand with lobbyists who support the Catholic Church?
Another comment from Facebook from Chumley: the church spent millions fighting LGBT equal rights and millions more hiding and defending these sad perverts, his language. Facebook comment from Holly: I think about how many of these men will not face criminal justice because of the statute of limitation laws, yet undocumented immigrants who pay taxes and otherwise law-abiding residents are target for deportation.
Yeah.
And it does, I mean, it raises so many issues that seem in contradiction, that seem that there's, you know, deep horror and hypocrisy here.
There is. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's the systematic cover-up, not only through Pennsylvania. I mean, really, we should have every state that has a diocese in it investigated, quite honestly. We probably need a national something to happen to get really to the bottom of this and see how systematic it truly was throughout our United States. I would love to see that happen, actually.
I have to say, and we'll be joined by Bishop Persico in just a couple of minutes, but one of the things that the grand jury said is that they felt that much had changed over the last 15 years. I mean, they feel as if there are still serious systemic problems, but they did say it appears now that the church is advising law enforcement of abuse reports more promptly. Internal review processes have been established. Victims are no longer quite so invisible. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's been great strides made in the last 15 years because they know they're under the microscope now. You know, only when they've been forced again into a corner are they doing the right thing. If we haven't been able to have these grand juries come out and have this awareness come out, they would still be doing exactly what they have always done. But finally, the light's being shined on them. They're doing the right thing now. But they can still be doing more. The Attorney General last night called out and said, if these bishops want to do the right thing, they need to support the recommendations within the grand jury report. Don't tell me you're taking responsibility for it. Let's hear you saying you're taking accountability and that you're going to support these recommendations. Because if any of these bishops will call any of these senators and say, you know what, we support this, these bills would run the first day that we're back and get to the governor's desk, and he would sign it, and then victims would finally start the healing process.
A number of names are redacted, and there was a fair amount of back and forth before the report was released yesterday, but there are some redacted names. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't need to have the whole report because, again, the scandal isn't about all the abuse in that grand jury report. We know that it's the bishops who aided and abetted these known perpetrators. That's the bottom line. And it's over and over and over in this grand jury report. They need to be held accountable.
There were references to secret archives and access to a lot of documents besides victim testimonies like yours. There were also access to something like 500,000 documents that,
yes,
that the grand jury looked at.
I mean, think about it. Their own documents named over 1,000 victims. Their own documents. And we know there's so many more out there. I mean, reading through this, starting last night and continuing this morning, I mean, this is absolutely egregious, despicable, what these leaders of the church did. And we're going to get to the work in the legislature to take care of this. I can promise you that.
How are you going to do that? And we're almost up in a break here. And I have to say that we're still waiting to get our third guest lined up. And if you can stay with us.
Yes, I definitely can.
Mark,
I mean,
Rossi.
Listen, as soon as we get back in September, I'm going to be having a meeting with the majority leader very shortly to discuss the plan of action in the House. And I think the majority leader, Dave Reed, put out a statement yesterday saying he will allow the 203 members of the House to decide what will be in that bill when we send it to the Senate. And again, we already passed criminal elimination last time. We already passed civil to 50 last time. And we already passed the retroactive component up to age 50 last time. We're shooting for the two-year window this time, mm-hmm, definitely criminal elimination, and moving the civil statute again, 30 to 50, or eliminating that altogether. And at that time, you know, finally, you know, we'll, the members of the House will have done their job.
Okay. I think we do have our... Yes, I got a thumbs up. Mark Rossi, thank you once again so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. State Representative Democrat Mark Rossi. Short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been discussing the scathing grand jury report alleging that 1,000 children were sexually abused by, quote, 301 pedophile priests over the last 70 years, and that Catholic Church leaders systematically covered up the crimes, reaching all the way to the Vatican. Attorney General Josh Shapiro didn't mince words yesterday, describing in graphic detail what the jury concluded and criticizing the church for the, quote, weaponization of the Catholic faith. He did say that one bishop gave him hope.
I want to single out Bishop Persico of Erie for his public actions recently, signaling a new way forward for the church to respond to the sexual abuse scandal. His response to this crisis actually gives me some hope. While some bishops submitted written statements, Bishop Persico was the only one to testify before the grand jury in person. He told the grand jury the mishandling of complaints by his predecessors made him angry and that he wanted to do the right thing. He did.
And joining us now is Bishop Lawrence Persico. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So why did you want to testify before the grand jury?
Well, prior to the time I testified, we changed the policy here in the Diocese of Erie. We published names. This was back in April, on April 6th. We published a list of credibly accused priests and lay people, lay men and women, mm-hmm, who had allegations. We published that. We put together, we updated our policy for the protection of children. And we enhanced the role of our office for the protection of young people, for children. So after all of that went public, I received an invitation from Deputy Attorney General if I would be willing to appear before the grand jury, which I did want to do because they wanted to hear about the policy and the new direction that we were moving in. So I spoke to the grand jury, and also it offered me an opportunity to apologize to them, mm-hmm, to have to sit there for 2 years and to hear from victims and abusers all these terrible, tragic crimes that were committed against children. It had to be very difficult. And I thought it was important that a bishop appear before them and answer any of their questions.
So the report has been released. It's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages. I've read some of it, but not all of it. Was it important that it be released and that the public get to read it?
Yes, I think it's important because it puts all of this into perspective. You know, when you put this out and it comes into the light, first of all, it gives validation to victims. Because I know after I put the first list out in April, I would receive phone calls from victims that we never heard of before. But they were grateful that they had an opportunity, as one person told me, that they feel validated after 59 years.
Wow, that's a long time to not feel validated.
Exactly. It's a long time to wait like that. And she was grateful that that we did this. And it also helps us to find other victims. Because if there's a name out there, then a victim can say, well, you know, it wasn't just me. Or I'm not the only person. There must have been others. So they're more willing to come forward.
Well, it is. This is a very, and I think by design, a very graphic report that was released detailing what was alleged to have happened. And it is not easy to read. It's infuriating in many kinds of ways. And while we hear about the abuse of children in graphic detail, what we see is a cover up by church leadership. I don't know. Are you an outlier, or are you a? How do you fit in with the church leadership?
Well, I hope I'm not an outlier. I would hope that this would be standard practice now.
Is it though?
I would hope so. I can't speak for every diocese. I have enough. If you read the grand jury report, I have enough to deal with in Erie.
Yes, you do.
But I don't see any other way. And I think by releasing the grand jury report, it forces church leaders to address these issues. That's important.
Let me just quote something, and again, this is graphic, but it needs to be said. This is from the grand jury report. They said, despite some institutional reform, individual leaders of the church have largely escaped public accountability. Priests were raping little boys and girls. The men of God who were responsible for them not only did nothing, they hid it all. For decades, monsignors, auxiliary bishops, bishops, archbishops, cardinals have mostly been protected. Many, including some named in this report, have been promoted. Until that changes, we think it's too early to close the book on the Catholic Church sex scandal. Agree, Bishop?
Pardon me?
Do you agree with that?
Yes. I mean, we can't think that this is over until we really change the way in which we conduct ourselves. And it has to be across the board.
Let me quote something that you wrote to Pope Francis, actually. This is July 25th, 2018, so just a couple of weeks ago. And this was before the Attorney General released the grand jury report, but as you were about you releasing your own report. And you said to the Pope, as I prepared to do so, anonymous petitioners implicated in this report went to court to stop me and silence the victims, notwithstanding the fact that the bishops in Pennsylvania pledged publicly to not stand in the way of truth. Credible reports indicate that at least two leaders of the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania are behind these efforts to silence the victims and avoid accountability. I'm curious what Pope Francis, if he said anything back to you.
I did not. That's quoted as something I said.
Oh, sorry. This is Josh Shapiro. I'm totally wrong about that, and I apologize for that. You did not say that. I got my pieces of paper mixed up here.
Oh, that's okay. When Attorney General Shapiro wrote to the Holy Father, I sent out a public statement calling for the release of the grand jury report. But I could also understand the frustration of the victims that, you know, this seemed to be another blocking of their ability to be heard. Because in many ways, the report is the voice of the victims.
Yeah. And I apologize for that. I should have clearly had my piles straightened out here.
Well, yeah, you just had me worried there. I thought I wrote something I didn't
remember. That you did not write. No, again, I apologize. Let me get Hillary.
That's all right.
Let me get Hillary from Princeton to join our conversation. Hillary, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks very much. I would actually like to address something that Bishop Prisco was just talking about. Pope Francis has actually been seen as pretty liberal, and I think he was. Like in 2013, he was saying priests could wash girls' feet, even Muslims, and he has now been anti-death penalty. He's sort of been liminally pro-gay. Why has he not been more forward about something that is easy compared to these things, child sexual abuse? I don't get it.
Well, Hillary, let me see what Bishop Persico says. And the Pope has certainly talked about this. I think he put together a commission. I'm not sure they have come up with any recommendations yet. But can you add to that, Bishop?
I think now Pope Francis, especially as what has happened in Chile, also Australia, is being more proactive and trying to get a handle on this. We need more, and we need more transparency.
How much is this hurting the church?
Well, it certainly shakes the faith of the people. And, you know, it's hard on the clergy, too. Those dedicated priests who work very hard and care for their people, this puts a cloud over them, too. So it is hard. And a lot of people are angry. They're frustrated. They just feel betrayed. So there, it's a number of emotions that come into play here. You know, especially if you've been a faithful churchgoer, and then all of a sudden, you know, when I put the list out the first time of names, I had a call from a person who was very upset because this was the priest that married her, and she was very fond of. And I, you know, it's very hard for people when they see this, that how, as Attorney General Shapiro said, weaponizes religion.
There was a video that played before he made his announcement. There were several people that talked about their own personal experiences having been abused by a priest. And one woman said how lonely it was because she felt it was her word against God's. And, of course, we know that, you know, priests are not the only people that sexually abuse children, but priests have a special place in the lives of believers.
Well, that's true. You know, basically, priests, bishops, are held to a higher standard. People expect that. So how devastating that is to be betrayed by them. It's like a parent betraying a child.
Are there empty pews in Catholic churches because of this ongoing scandal?
I'm sure there are. And they're empty for a variety of reasons, too.
Not just this abuse scandal?
No. I mean, you know, it's attendance is down. Well, one of the things here in northeast United States, our population is dwindling, too. We don't have the population that we once had. So that also contributes to fewer people.
We've got a lot of comments here. Let me read a couple of them. One asking, do you support waiving criminal, if not civil, statute of limitations for child rape? And if not, why not? And this is something we talked with State Representative Rossi before you joined us, and he has been fighting that fight in the legislature, hasn't gotten all that he wants. But this report had a number of recommendations about the statute of limitations. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I haven't really studied that, but let me just say that if they want to, you know, open the window and drop the statute of limitation. There may be some legal questions there. Then they better create a level playing field for everyone so that all victims, not just victims of the Catholic Church, but victims in public and private institutions, in other religions, will have their opportunity too.
Let me quote something, and this is the press release from the Attorney General's office having to do with your diocese about, and I'll just quote here, an Erie father, David Paulson, was charged with sexually assaulting a boy for 8 years, starting when he was 8 years old. Paulson had the boy go to confession and admit his sins to Paulson. Bishop Donald Troutman, who preceded you, knew about it and covered up the abuse. What can you say in response to that?
Well, I don't think he covered up the abuse. Maybe it wasn't the best way to investigate it, but he got the information firsthand. He tried to contact the victim. The victim wouldn't return his calls or respond to his letters. So he tried to talk to the victim. The victim wouldn't come forth. But fortunately, we had another victim who was willing to come forward, and that's what brought about his eventual arrest for Paulson.
The Attorney General also talked, and the grand jury talked about these secret archives and got something like 500,000 reports from those archives, probably other documents as well, but basically saying that bishops had the key to the archives and kept those archives locked. What can you say about the quote-unquote secret archives?
Well, simply, the secret archives are really confidential files. You know, any place of employment has files. There's regular personnel files, and then there are confidential files. Well, if they're confidential files, you're going to lock them, aren't you? And, I mean, when we think secret, it gives the impression that this is hush-hush. Everyone knows that we had secret we had these confidential files. They're personnel files. I have confidential files when, you know, a parishioner is upset with a sermon that the pastor gave. That complaint letter goes in there.
But
so there's a number of files that pertain to that.
We're almost out of time here, but was it also a place where bishops could hide information?
I don't think it was intentional to hide information, but it was, as I said, it was they were just confidential files. I don't, you know, they're personnel files.
But it seems like in those files were reports of abuse.
Yes, there were. Or allegations.
Or allegations.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you. We are out of time. I appreciate you joining us today in Radio Times. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And that's Bishop Lawrence Persico of the Erie Diocese and talking about the grand jury report that was released yesterday detailing pedophile priests, that's the language from the report, abusing 1,000 children over a 70-year period in Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and carry on a Facebook page that we started yesterday about this report. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern, with assistance today from Susan Greenbaum. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.